Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. While our politics have moved further and further to the right over the last few decades, we'll look into the apparent shift that indicates the American people are starting to move to the left. David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report, joins us to discuss the new blue America that will get bluer and how much our purple president will shift with the progressive wind. Then we will speak with University of Indianapolis presidential historian Edward France, the author of The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents and the First Southern Strategy. We will discuss the current fratricide and recrimination inside the Republican Party and assess whether the GOP can reverse course in its march to the right to rediscover its progressive roots as the party of Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. Then finally, we'll look into the surging tide of women candidates swept into office in the recent election and speculate whether the ultimate glass ceiling, the election of a woman as president of the United States, is about to crack. Jo Freeman, an American feminist, political scientist, writer, and attorney, joins us to discuss the emerging new majority of women, the young, and minorities, and whether the Republicans will come back in 2014. And joining us now is David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress and senior vice president at the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitutional Society, White House speechwriter, and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Halperin.
Good to be back with you, Ian. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. And if you were on the Senate in your old job as counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee, you'd be working overtime now, right?
I guess that's right. Although I don't really know how much this has to do with intelligence and intelligence policy. I think that some Republicans, conservatives might want to use this to embarrass the president, but I think that it really should be pushed aside. There are legitimate questions about Benghazi and of course, about our intelligence operations generally. But the bad judgment of the director of Central Intelligence on a personal matter, I think, is not really something, or the former director, that critical. And I think that the idea of embarrassing innocent family members in this any further seems like something that Congress ought to think twice about, especially until they get their own house in order on these kind of things.
Well, it wouldn't have happened, but for the fact that there was a zealous right-wing FBI agent who thought that this involved a cover-up over Benghazi, which, of course, obviously, if you watch Fox News, that's the lead story every night for the last month. Yeah. And he apparently went to Eric Cantor, the House Republican whip, and that's why this, I think, became a scandal.
I guess so. Well, I don't know exactly what forced it out, but he may have been zealous right-wing, or he may have just continue to be love-struck by this woman that apparently everyone in the world is in love with.
This new breed of groupies.
She just, I guess, is irresistible.
Right. But the idea
makes men do crazy things.
Yeah, but the idea that, you know, I know about groupies for rock stars, you know, but I've never heard of groupies for generals.
There are groupies for almost any class of person. And then the men on the other side of it act like idiots no matter what their status.
Sure. Well, David, let's talk about something real here. And even though, of course, scandal trumps substance, as we all know, we are not France, as it happens. But tell me, what do you make of the possibility that we now, from this last election, we clearly have a blue majority in this country? And it is, according to demographics, it's likely to get bigger and bluer over the years. And as you know, the Republican Party are going through all kinds of recriminations, and people like Steve Schmidt are accusing Limbaugh and company, who are in many ways the de facto heads of the Republican Party, of being the Republican entertainment complex, and that they're destroying the Republican Party. And then conversely, Limbaugh and company are all saying that they're being scapegoated for candidates who aren't conservative enough, and so on and so on. So while one party is going through fratricide, the other party, you would think, would be on a roll. But there's a certain concern that a lot of people have that we have a blue America, but we may have a purple president. And he may unilaterally give in on something like Social Security unnecessarily. What's your sense of disquiet in that regard?
Well, I do think we are developing a blue America because I think that there are too many people that find it unacceptable that the Republican Party is held hostage to things like continuing to give tax cuts for the rich that are just more than we can afford, that is anti-choice and says that a woman has to bear a child when she was raped, that has a touch of sort of Rush Limbaugh bigotry, that is anti-immigrant. So I do think we are moving in a direction where there's and it is intolerant of freedom to marry for all people, including LGBT people. So I do think we're moving to a place where young people, immigrants, people of color, and a good number of working people generally, including white working people, as well as educated people, are tired of those Republican limits on freedom and on justice, and on a rational society. So that's good. As far as what then the president will do with that, because I think the president is a progressive, I agree. There's a chance that he's hemmed in some ways, or perceives that he's hemmed in or wants to be, by the influence of big business that sometimes has America's interest at heart and sometimes on some issues does not, by people telling him, maybe pushing too hard on fiscal things that don't necessarily need to be so buttoned up, in the sense that we probably could afford a little bit more stimulus right now or could use it for our economy. And by other things that, could lead him to be a second-term purple president. On the other hand, you do have a House majority of Republicans. You do have the undeniable influence of business in a post-Citizens United world. They may not have won the election, but they can get in the airwaves and try to influence everything the president does on issues like health care, climate change, the budget. And it may be that, that he will have to settle for something that isn't what all the progressives who voted for him wanted, and that he still will have done the best that he can.
Again, I'm speaking with David Halpern, senior fellow at the Republic Report, and he was previously a White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, in terms of your old boss, President Clinton, in many ways he was a purple president, certainly in his second term. And both he and Barack Obama have stated that in many ways their political outlook was informed by Ronald Reagan. And, of course, they grew up in the Reagan era and came of age as politicians in the Reagan era. But arguably the Reagan era is over. This is a whole new ballgame. And again, I'm wondering whether they are dealing with a polity that is extinct.
Well, I believe that when they expressed admiration for President Reagan, it was for his, the way he was perceived, at least, as a success, rather than really sharing his values. But it's also true that he did, because Reagan kind of moved the rhetoric and the sense of political possibility, they do feel hemmed in, and they do feel, I think, that if you push too hard leftward, you may end up a bigger failure. And I think that, I think that maybe President Obama does feel a little of that left over from, what he saw in the Clinton years. Clinton moved to the right. He did welfare reform. People resigned his administration in protest. He made budget deals with Newt Gingrich and came out, triumphant. And notwithstanding impeachment, it seemed as a very successful president. So I do think that Obama, there's a temptation to say, if you push too hard left, you may end up with a failed presidency where you accomplish not enough. I think it is really interesting to see what Obama decides to do, because I do think he's a progressive. I do think there are things as a progressive that he would like to accomplish and that progressives would like him to accomplish, on protecting the rights of working people, on advancing civil rights, continuing to fight for civil rights. And so I think I do think it'll be interesting to see where he comes out. I would like to see him fight. I do believe, as you say, we have a more blue America. It may not have the money, but it has power, and it's shown a willingness to organize and to vote. And if the president does stand up for some important progressive goals in his second term, that he would get a lot of support from the American people. And I think it's worth a shot. I think just lowering your sights and saying, the real president is Pete Peterson, and his foundation to cut the deficit, or the real president is the Chamber of Commerce right across the street from the White House with all their money. That would be disappointing, and it would be bad for all the people who work so hard to elect the president.
Well, it seems, David Halperin, that our politics have moved inexorably to the right, and the Republican Party itself has moved so far to the right that people like Steve Schmidt and others are now calling out the so-called the Republican entertainment complex, the Limbaughs, etc. So there's no question that the Republican Party's moved to the right, the Democrats moved to the right, but the country seems to be moving to the left, and that's what I'm suggesting here, that, you know, maybe it's safer to tack back, and or maybe it's actually more in line with where the country's going.
The problem that they face, I think on issues like gay marriage and immigration, I think they can overcome the opposition and keep on pushing in a more progressive, inclusive direction for our country. And I don't think that that will be as big a challenge for the president as things where you're taking on rich people and business interests. So the taxes, but I do think now there's a mandate, which I think he will get, that rich people are going to have to pay a little bit more taxes. I think the real challenges come on issues where it's not just an ideological conservative position, but it's a pro-corporate, Koch brothers, ExxonMobil, lobbying, you know, Washington Power, those kind of issues. It's going to be tougher for the president to take on, you know, the corporate lobbyists and all the money they have and all their ability to create fake grassroots campaigns and advertisements on TV and give campaign contributions. That whole world of money-dominating politics, I think, is the toughest thing for the president to overcome, because it doesn't matter as much there that a majority of voters voted for the progressive, more progressive candidate. What matters there the most, unfortunately, is the influence of big money and their ability to punish people who stand up against them. And that's where I'd like to see the president get tougher, take a tougher stand. And I do think that, like you say, the people are on the progressive side of those issues. And it's just, it will take communications challenge and organizing challenge, and it'll take courage for the president to stand up against those interests on continuing to protect, to provide more health insurance for people and control the costs of health care, on making sure that, you know, my favorite issue, of course, is protecting against the rip-off for-profit colleges that have been wasting so much of our tax money. And really maybe the biggest issue is on dealing with the issue of climate change and having a more rational energy policy that takes into account how much dirty energy actually hurts people. And at this point, many of the big energy companies free ride off that. And the president needs to stand up, do something like have a carbon tax, or have a cap-and-trade system, or otherwise work to make sure that we're not continuing to move in a direction where our energy has such huge costs, such as the cost right now being faced by people in New York, New Jersey, because of the storm, which clearly, you know, it seems to a lot of experts, was a result of the fact that we're using too much dirty energy, and it's leading to global warming.
Again, I'm speaking with David Halperin, Senior Fellow at Republic Report, and previously was a White House speechwriter and Special Assistant for National Security Affairs to President Clinton and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, the reason that we have this so-called fiscal cliff in the first place is because the deal wasn't made back in 2011 when the Tea Party in the Republican House took the entire nation to the brink of losing its full faith and credit. And, of course, we know that our debt was downgraded as a result of that. And because they couldn't reach a deal, they came up with this sequester arrangement that has now been dubbed the fiscal cliff. And, again, in many ways, that feels to me like playing into the Pete Peterson deficit hawk milieu, the idea that the sky is falling. But one of the things I find troubling about those negotiations back then was that apparently the president put quite a lot on the table in terms of Social Security and Medicare. And now that we have a different political arrangement in Washington as a result of this election, what's your sense about what's going to be on the table? Because it would seem to me they're talking about a grand bargain, but a lot of other people are talking about this could be the great betrayal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's on the table then. I don't know what the president's willing to do. I hope he will stand with the seniors who have worked so hard and expected Social Security and even younger people who you know been putting money into that system for so long, and may have no other, unlike Mitt Romney, may not have any other source of income in retirement. I hope he will stand with people that depend on Medicare and Medicaid to make sure that they're not having to choose between eating dinner and seeing a doctor. I think that those people are, you know, the reason that government exists is in many respects is to make sure that those people, you know, have a decent life and that we can afford in this affluent country that we've built, notwithstanding the economic downturn in recent years, to make sure that we take care of those people. And I think the president can and will, I believe he will, not sell out those people, and that there's room in this to make sure that the rich pay more taxes, to look for cuts. Frankly, I think we could cut a lot of defense at this point, buying a lot of weapons systems that we don't necessarily need, given the threats that we face right now. Look for other ways to do this without making it a betrayal. And I'm not going to say now that I'm sure the president will betray people on that, because I think that I want to believe that he's a good person. When I ran Campus Progress for 8 years, he came to spoken to of our events, was very inspiring. I got to talk with him a little bit. I think he's a good person, a progressive, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he will take his electoral victory and use it to vindicate the interests of people who stood with him and who supported him and who don't want to see us sell out the most vulnerable people in our society.
So given what you've just said, David Halper, then perhaps the onus is on the people who help bring about this blue America, this emerging new progressive majority, the young, the minorities and the women in this country who showed up. And of course, more of them showed up in 2008, and many abdicated as a result of disappointment that the president who was supposed to bring about hope and change was mortal and somehow didn't deliver on everything that everybody was hoping for. And I recall the famous adage of FDR during the Depression, when progressives came to him and wanted to be more aggressive, and he said, make me do it. And, is this a time, for in other words, for people to put the wind at the president's back and stand with him and not be so petulant?
I think that people have to be the president's friend and give him the benefit of the doubt, but also push him. On the conservative side, you'll see if a Republican president like George W. Bush or George H.W. Bush takes a stand that looks like they're compromising, you will see conservatives, the hardline conservatives, and even the professional conservatives, and certainly the corporate conservatives, can go nuts and be really tough and not be so, not just shut up. And that helps. That's right. That what Roosevelt said is right. I got in trouble a couple years ago at work because I criticized the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, because she voted with for-profit colleges, but I thought she had done the wrong thing, and all I said was we were disappointed. And some people at my work didn't like that I said that, but I thought it was an important thing to do to say, when they'd asked me a year earlier to say something nice about Leader Pelosi, I did. I thought she was terrific, and I thought that she should stay as the leader, notwithstanding the disappointing results in the 2008 election. But the next year, when she voted a way that I didn't think was right, I thought it was my responsibility as an advocate for young people at the time to speak out against what she did. And you know what? She didn't turn her back on our organization. I think it's okay when the Republicans always come in and say, look, we'd love to compromise, but we've got Grover Norquist, Rush Limbaugh, all these people. That is a plus for them to be able to say that they're feeling that pressure. They can only go so far. So I think tough love for the president from progressives is a good thing. To say that we give him the benefit of the doubt and that we're glad that he was elected, but at the same time to be able to say, if we disagree with him, we disagree with you, and if you go too far, if you sell out our interests, we will organize, we will speak out, we'll get things done. I think that's part of democracy. So when people say, shut up, Obama can only do so much, don't criticize him, I don't think that is helping him. I think President Roosevelt and you hit it right on the head.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, David Halpern.
Ian, it's great to be on the show.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress and senior vice president at the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitutional Society, and White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll come back and look into the current fratricide and recrimination inside the Republican Party.
The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changin'.